This is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
I'm Martin Strong. Let's get right to the consumer news from the past week. BC cannabis growers are accusing the mayor of Vancouver of being a total buzzkill. When he was elected, one of Mayor Ken Sim's promises was to help Vancouver get rid of its no-fun reputation. But that didn't really square with participants and vendors involved with the 420 celebration last Saturday, meant to celebrate all things cannabis. Tara Kirkpatrick, who heads the BC Craft Farmers Co-op, says in a letter sent this week to Sim that instead of making it fun, the city and police got all heavy, man, by targeting vendors and putting up fences to stop the unsanctioned weed celebration. Kirkpatrick says in the letter that if they sanctioned the event, it could bring in international tourists and millions of dollars to the provincial economy by highlighting BC's world renowned cannabis farmers. Kirkpatrick says you just have to look at Prince George to see the contrast. Last Saturday, the city of Prince George held their third annual cannabis summit and authorized a street party for a 420 event that was even attended by the mayor of Prince George. So maybe coffee is more your drug of choice. Are you drinking more of the stuff these days? If so, you're not alone. New numbers show coffee consumption is hitting an all-time high in North America. It's worth pointing out that the stats were actually compiled by the coffee industry, but the U.S. National Coffee Association reports 67% of adults have had at least one cup in the past 24 hours. That's up from less than 50% back in 2004. It's now estimated that the average person in North America drinks 2.7 cups of coffee every day. And you can compare that to Finland, where the typical Java junkie will drink 4 cups of coffee a day. That's in Finland. The price of a Tesla is going down again. The electric car company is dealing with slow sales around the world and a stock price that has been taking some serious hits over the past year. So now Tesla has slashed prices on many of its models. They're also making their full self-driving system cheaper. Tesla CEO Elon Musk has also announced on Tuesday that they are updating their future vehicle lineup with a bunch of brand new Tesla models, which will be more affordable. One of those is expected to be the long, elusive robo-taxi, which Musk has been talking about for years. Now, Musk appears to be betting that the unveiling of a new robo-taxi on August 8th, basically a taxi cab that drives itself, will be the catalyst that his company needs to return to huge annual sales growth. The feud between Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and the Premier of Saskatchewan is heating up, with the PM threatening to sic Canada revenue on them. Trudeau said on Tuesday that the CRA is very good at getting money that it's owed, a reference to Premier Scott Moe, who is calling for a carbon tax exemption on home heating fuels in Saskatchewan, and he's kind of threatening to withhold the carbon taxes collected on behalf of Ottawa, which would be against federal law. Trudeau wished Moe good luck, saying he wouldn't wish for anyone to be in a position to argue with the CRA about not wanting to pay their taxes. Canada's tourism industry is slowly coming back to life. It brought in $109 billion last year. Well, that's a little more than the year before the pandemic hit. It is significantly less in real terms after accounting for inflation and the fact that international visitor numbers are down from 5 years ago as well. And this can only help tourism in this town. Two Vancouver bars have made a prestigious list of some of the best bars in North America. The Kiefer and the Botanist Bar made the 2024 list of the continent's top 50 by the publication World's 50 Best Restaurants. The Kiefer came 49th. It was recognized for highlighting the history of Chinatown. That's where it's located. And the Botanist Bar inside the Fairmont Pacific Rim came 24th. Judges noted the visual uniqueness of drinks like the Rain Couver, calling it equal parts showpiece and equal parts storytelling. This is Vancouver Consumer on CKNW. I'm Martin Strong. And things are changing in the Vancouver real estate market, especially tax laws, with a proposed change to the capital gains tax. And it makes you wonder, are homeowners being targeted by the federal government? We're going to talk about that with our friend John Carlson. You know him as Johnny Smartpoint. He's here and we'll talk to him next.
This is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
Welcome back. It's Vancouver Consumer. I'm Martin Strong, and it's time to talk real estate. And there are some big changes going on. The federal budget came out a couple of weeks ago, and some changes to the capital gains tax, which were a bit jarring. And it kind of begs the question, with all these new taxes for homeowners, there's the vacancy taxes and all these other things, are homeowners being targeted? And that's our topic this afternoon with our guest, John Carlson. You know him as Johnny Smartpoint. You can find him online at johnnysmartpoint.com. You can also email him at john@johnnysmartpoint.com, 604-612-0080. I don't need to tell you, he's been in the business for a very, very long time, over 1,000 properties sold all over the Lower Mainland. And John is with us now. Hi, John. How are you?
Martin, I'm doing fine. Great to be back with you again.
Yeah, and that was a pretty big news story that I don't know, I guess a lot of people are talking about it, the changes to the capital gains tax. And that would really affect you if you owned more than one pieces of property, if you had a residential property. And it kind of begs the question, with all the things like the vacancy taxes and all those extra fees that they're piling on to people who own homes, sort of makes you wonder, are homeowners being targeted?
It feels that way, doesn't it, sometimes? Mm-hmm. And I, of course, being in the real estate business, I've talked to people who are thinking of selling, who are selling, they're thinking of buying. And, you know, it is a common, you know, feeling out there, I think, Martin, that people say, gee, what's coming next for us homeowners? We've had this tax, that tax, flipping taxes. And, you know, it always reminds me of one of my favorite quotes, or that old famous bank robber, I think it was in the 1800s, Willie Sutton. When right. They finally caught him, someone said, hey, Willie, why do you rob banks? And his famous response was, that's where they keep the money.
That's something that we should point out, first of all, because if you own property in the Lower Mainland, good for you. You're one of the lucky few, and there are probably a lot of people listening who want to get in the market, and it's not that easy. And we understand that, but it's also just because you own a piece of property, it doesn't make it all that easy. And it does seem like there are a lot of disincentives now as they try to kind of ease this housing crisis. And this big one that I want to talk to you about now is the increase in capital gains.
Sure.
And that's coming up in June.
That's when they're proposing. That's right. June 25th is the deadline. And I want to lead off by saying I'm not an accountant. I'm not giving anyone here accounting advice or legal advice. I'm not a property manager. I work with accountants and property managers in conjunction with my clients when it comes time to make a good decision about how to handle the disposition of real estate. And this capital gains tax, you know, has applied to not your principal residence, Martin. I've even heard trial balloons floated over the years about, hey, should we bring this in? And it seems to be political suicide. So this does not apply to mom and pop and family owning their principal residence home.
Right. And I think that's something we should sort of kind of make clear, just in case people don't know. If you own a home and you live in that home, it's your primary residence. When you sell that home, any profits you made, there's no tax, right?
That's right. Absolutely. You know, maybe down in the United States, they've got different systems and you can write off your mortgage payments and things. But here, no, you pay your mortgage payments. You've got an investment in your home. And let's face it, in our area, things have gone up and up and up over the years. And so most people who've had home ownership for years or decades have made quite a gain. Mm-hmm. And believe me, Martin, when I sit down with people, one of the common themes that I get sitting down with a family or a couple or a single person who says, you know, it's time for me to maybe downsize or sell or move. they make it very clear that this is a really important investment. This is their nest egg. This is where most people, you know, gain a lot of their retirement income is from owning a piece of property that's really appreciated. So it's a serious business, a serious matter. When it comes to investment properties, for a long time now, and again, I'm not giving anyone accounting advice. This is just some general information for people who might not know. If I have a rental condo, a house, townhouse, and it's, let's say it was worth $500,000 when I bought it 10 years ago, and now it's worth $1.2 million. If I haven't lived in that property, that gain, which would be in this case $700,000, would be taxable. And the way the federal government has you know, dealt with this up until very recently is to say, hey, let's look at half of that. We're going to tax you basically on half of that. You get half of that gain tax-free. The other half, we want our cut. And so generally that means it pushes into the top half bracket and you're paying 50% of your gain on 50% of it. Well, the change now is that they're saying, the federal government's saying, hey, you know, we want to take taxes on two-thirds and we're going to let you have one-third tax exempt. Now, again, not an accountant. There are such things as personal exemptions. There are business losses that can be carried forward for, you know, for more sophisticated investors who have multiple properties. So your best friend in this situation is to talk to your accountant. Things are still being worked out and talk to your property manager. But I'm on the real estate end of things. So I help people come up with some ideas about how to potentially deal with this. And, you know, I would first of all just throw this out there, Martin. If you've got an investment property, you've been thinking of selling it, it's not necessarily too late to sell that property under the old tax structure. We just have to get a completion prior to June 25th. And that might involve convincing a buyer to assume the balance of a tenancy. So there's just one little tip right there. But this is a topic that's big for people right now. And there's a lot of potential sellers out there who are investing who are wondering, Martin, is it really time? Should I hang on to this property or is it time for me to unload?
Right, right. We're talking to John Carlson. You know him as Johnny Smart Point. You can find him online, johnnysmartpoint.com. You can send him an email, john@johnnysmartpoint.com, if you've got a property that you're looking to sell. And I guess the idea, this proposed increase in the capital gains tax being in June, that's not a lot of time. So I guess they were very careful not to give people too much time because it would, do you think that would cause a stampede of people selling their, you know, in investment property?
I think that thought went into the calculation. You know, obviously I wasn't part of it. I wasn't there, but you're right. There's not a whole lot of deadline. I think that there's political pressure on all levels of government right now to increase housing supply in terms of rentals for tenants. And if you give people too long to make a decision to back out of the market, you know, maybe they do. So this kind of hit people as a surprise. And, you know, it is what it is. My job as a real estate agent is to, you know, to make sure I'm representing the interests of my clients, that I'm giving them really solid advice, and I'm safeguarding their interests. Because when you've got an investment property and you're thinking of selling it, there's a couple things to think of. One might be the tax situation and your retirement portfolio, whatever it might be. But the other is, you're going to be selling a property that's tenanted, and that opens its whole other can of worms too. So you want a good experienced agent if you're selling a tenanted property, because even that landscape is changing and getting a little more thorny, if you will. And you have to be very careful as a landlord to make sure you follow the guidelines of the Residential Tenancy Office property and keep your hands clean, so to speak, when it comes to legal matters, so that you're protected.
And I guess a lot of people, I think most people, they don't want to screw their tenants. And I know we had one of your clients who was very happy a few weeks ago doing kind of a testimonial for you. And he was very happy because he sold a property that had a tenant living in it. And he said that you were very, you know, kind of courteous and thoughtful about dealing with the tenant, because I guess you have to have open houses, and it's important that the tenant is part of the process, maybe?
Absolutely. I mean, the tenant pays the rent. It's their home. You know, they've got a lot of say in terms of what happens, and that's the way it should be. But again, dealing with tenants is, you know, it's a bit of a skill. It's a bit of an art. There's some experience there, because tenants don't have any skin in the game. And oftentimes, there's a real downside for a tenant. If I've been renting a place for 10 or 15 years, chances are, due to the laws about rent increases, I'm paying far under market rent. And the idea of someone selling the property I'm renting is very scary to me. So again, this is just one of the small little details. But when I work with investors, when I sell tenanted properties, I make sure, you know, to say to the, you know, again, I'm an advisor. I tell my client, the seller, that we need to include the tenant in this process and give them, let them know, hey, maybe they'll be able to stay, maybe not, we don't know, but they have rights, the seller has rights, and my job is to navigate that system, keep everybody happy and satisfied so that I can cultivate the right result for my client and get a good sale with a good terms and a good price.
And I guess a lot of these new regulations are aimed at sort of easing the housing crisis for people. I mean, the empty homes tax is one of those things. And I have to say, if you own a house and you live in that house, it's very simple. You have to fill out a lot of paperwork just so you don't have to pay the empty vacant home tax, even if you've lived in that house for a long time. And it kind of drives me nuts because you have to do it for the province, you have to do it for the city. And if you forget that the city will, if you're late, like by a day, the city will charge you $200. There's a $200 fine.
Yes. And once again, it comes back to the topic that you opened up with, our homeowners' targets right now. And I'm going to say to some degree they are, because in this economy and this market that we've seen over the past decade and plus, these are the people that have money and equity. And I think all levels of government right now are looking not only to make housing more affordable, but to, to put money in the coffers of the government. And so, yeah, we got to be smart in terms of how we handle our real estate. And that applies, I think, to your principal residence. They say, Martin, the saying in real estate is, you don't make money when you sell your home, you make money when you buy. So you want to be smart when you're getting into the market and make sure you buy a home with some thought to resale in the future. But there's also truth in the fact that when it comes time to sell, you want to look at the environment you're operating in and make sure that you handle it in the best way. And I think that's where an experienced real estate agent comes into play, in conjunction with your property manager, if you have one, and your accountant.
Mm-hmm. That would be John Carlson, Johnny Smart Points. Just go to johnnysmartpoint.com. There's two N's in Johnny, johnnysmartpoint.com, 604-612-0080. The email is john@johnnysmartpoint.com. And we've been talking about the increase in the capital gains, the proposed increase. So is the housing crisis solved with this? I say sarcastically.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? You know, it looks like there's going to be... who knows what's coming in the future, but we've always got changes in this industry, and that's one of the things that keeps it interesting for me and keeps me in a job.
Yeah. It's true. Well, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about what John can do for you, and not just as a real estate agent. I mean, obviously as a real estate agent, but for people who are maybe wondering what their home is worth. For example, a lot of people just, they don't really have an idea of what it's worth, and they're thinking maybe it's time, we're getting close to retirement. But John can take a look at your situation, and it's not a commitment thing at this point. You can actually help people kind of figure out what they do next, is what I'm saying.
And, yeah.
We'll talk about that when we come back. This is Vancouver Consumer. I'm Martin Strong. We're talking with John Carlson. And I'll point out johnnysmartpoint.com, once again, the website. If you go to his website, you can see all his listings. You've got a open house tomorrow.
That's right.
Maybe quickly say what it is. And then,
oh, yeah.
Before
okay.
we go.
I've got an open house in West Maple Ridge. We talked last week about the fact that Maple Ridge is a hot market because of affordability of building lots. Well, this is a 70-foot frontage lot. You could build a big, beautiful dream home here. It's on the west side. Walk to high school, walk to elementary school. The list price is $1,098,000. The address is 12222 211 Street, Maple Ridge. Come and see me Sunday, 2 to 4.
We'll tell you about that and much more when Vancouver Consumer continues right after this.
This is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
Welcome back. It's Vancouver Consumer. I'm Martin Strong, and we're talking real estate with our friend John Carlson, Johnny Smart Point. You can find him online, johnnysmartpoint.com. You can give him a call, 604-612-0080. And I don't know if you like people saying how many years you've been in the business, but how many years has it been?
This is my 28th year, Martin. I started in 1996.
Yeah. So you've seen all the ups and downs, and you've sold more than 1,000 properties. And I guess it's different all the time because, you know, like during COVID, it was this crazy time, which is probably different from any other time in this city.
Oh, gosh. I could tell you stories about the initial COVID days where we're wrapping our, you know, tucking our gloves in our sleeves and duct taping our, you know, jackets closed and not breathing on people. This industry is fantastic. It keeps me jumping. It keeps me active. And I can tell you that, you know, having experience in this business has got to be one of the biggest strengths that an agent can offer. But not just experience 20 years ago, but recent experience too, because the landscape keeps changing and you got to kind of keep on top of things. And that's one of the things I like about my brokerage at the RE/MAX Lifestyles is it gives me the opportunity to really stay on top of a lot of these things so that I can keep my axe sharp, so to speak.
Right.
And then when I sit down with people and meet with them, you know, I've usually got the answers, and when I don't, I know who to call to get them. But the landscape keeps changing. You want to keep on your toes because I'm going to let people into what I think is a little secret in the real estate industry. When you have transactions, purchases and sales of real estate, these are big ticket items. And, you know, there can be, I'll say this gently, Martin, there can be and often are winners and losers. And by that, I mean, if I have a client and we're looking for a property, I mean, I give them the best advice I can. And I put my skills out in the open on the table and we come up with a plan to try to get the right price on a home and the right terms. And I've had, you know, a number of situations, I think a lot of good agents have, where you sit down with somebody at the end of the day, you have a purchase of a home, and then another one comes up on the block a couple doors down, and it's $100,000 more. Like, those buyers just made $100,000. Why? Well, maybe because they had a good strategy, and maybe that had a lot to do with the agent they're working with. Similarly, with a sale, when I work with a seller, Martin, this is an important deal. I mean, people are talking about retiring and they're talking about, you know, leaving money to their kids in the future, or maybe they need the money to finance whatever's going on in their lives. And knowing the landscape of the market, understanding the process of negotiation, understanding how to get everything you can, extract all the information you can from the other side and the other agent so that you can give a high resolution understanding to your seller so that they can make good decisions. Maybe that decision is, hey, this isn't the right offer for us, let's wait. Maybe it's, let's see if we can hold these guys a little bit longer and maybe we can get offers B and C at the table. Whatever these strategies are, this is what I offer my clients, whether it's a principal residence or an investment property. And I think you want to handle your business in real estate in a very, very smart way. And if you do, you should come out feeling happy enough to say, call the radio and tell everybody about it.
Right. I like that, John Carlson, because it is an abstract thing because you're throwing around numbers like $1.8 million and you know, $50,000, $100,000 might seem like a small little difference, plus or minus, but that's $50,000, $100,000.
How long does it take to earn $50,000 or $100,000 after tax money? And if this is your principal residence, that's exactly what we're talking about. So again, that's where the skill set comes in. That's why, you know, I think one of the best pieces of the puzzle in terms of your real estate portfolio, whether it's just your single house, your investment property, is have a good agent who can deliver the goods, so to speak, when it comes time to sell.
John Carlson is our guest. Johnny SmartPoint. You can find him online, Johnny SmartPoint, and you can learn everything about him. You can see his listings on the webpage. And we talked a little bit about people who have investment properties because the capital gains, they've proposed an increase to the capital gains tax. And having tenants in those properties makes the whole thing a little bit more complicated. And you do that kind of work a lot. And so people can call you and kind of just get advice from you, right? Like you talk to a lot of people, not necessarily people who turn out to be clients, but you have a lot of people you deal with.
You know, I do because again, I don't, you know, I'm busy. I don't want to just talk just for the sake of, you know, talking about houses, but sometimes people need to formulate a plan that they're not going to put into effect for another year or something like that. And so I do get calls and I'll invite you know, listeners, one thing, again, with this new capital gains tax situation that's come along, I've had a few people call me, and I've got investors that I've worked with, but new people even, and they've said, you know, I don't want to scare my tenant off. You know, they're good tenants.
Yeah.
But boy, I'm thinking of selling. I don't know what my property's worth. And so I can do what I would call a discrete evaluation. Sometimes it's a condo or a townhouse. If it's a strata property, I can pull a lot of information on my online sources. I can get square footage. I can get tax assessed values. I can look up, say, the unit entitlement, which is kind of your percentage of the building or the development that you own with your one unit. And I can compare it to other units. And I can give people a pretty accurate idea of what their property might be worth without the tenants ever getting a clue of what's going on. So I always like to say, though, that I need to fine-tune that by seeing condition and some of the intangibles. Like, are you looking over a dumpster? Are you looking over the ocean? There are different things that I might not know if you don't tell me. But yeah, I can. If people want to go to my website, they can always call me, or you can just send me an email and say, hey, here's my name, here's my phone number, and here's my property address. Could you send me a property report? And I can give people quite a bit of information if they're serious and if they're, you know, considering working with me at some point in the future. These are things I can do to make it easier.
Yeah, and then that's good business, I guess, because in this day and age when the property is so valuable, selling it is not, for a lot of people, it's not something that you do on, you know, in a moment's notice, unless maybe you got a new job and you got to move or something. But for a lot of people, they're probably thinking, well, I want to do it a year from now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Different timelines, different situations. And again, a good agent should be able to fit into any of those sort of situations without pressuring people or, you know, some of these hard closes or, you know, hey, would you, if I could show you this, would you do that? You don't get any of that with me. I just simply provide information. I provide my expertise as best I can. When it gets time to really get to work, of course, there's listing contracts and there's agency disclosures that we go all through. But again, the process has to start somewhere. So I welcome those calls and those emails from listeners who need to get a little bit of information, even to come up with a plan.
Yeah, and I guess there's a lot of people who have people living maybe in a basement suite, and they don't want to lose that person. Absolutely. Living in the basement.
Yeah, and the last thing you want to do is panic a tenant and have them leave and kind of leave you high and dry if you're not ready. So there's a lot of little subtleties and, you know, things you want to do to be careful when you're dealing with, you know, tenanted properties. And again, some of these tenancies are unauthorized too. So you got to be kind of careful how you handle certain things when you go to City Hall and all that stuff. So again, experience matters.
Yeah, experience matters. And John Carlson is the experienced one. Johnny Smart Point. You can go to his website, johnnysmartpoint.com. The email address is john@johnnysmartpoint.com or 604-612-0080. John has a phone. As a realtor, I guess your phone is like your most important piece of equipment. But if you go to the website, johnnysmartpoint.com, you can see all your listings, but you have an open house.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Let's talk about that one again.
And you love this one.
Well, I do, because if you were to, this is just a fantastic family neighborhood on 211 Street in Maple Ridge. And so if you walk around the corner, you get to Volker Park and you have Lady View Elementary School. You've got Westview Secondary School close by. And it's just one of those, you know, we talked about this last show that Maple Ridge is one of the hot areas when it comes to detached homes because it's affordable there. You can still buy a home, and I think the average price is in the just under $1.2 million or something for a detached house, 1-1 something. And so this one offers a big frontage, and if you walk through this area or just drive through it, you'll see. Like this one is a nice little 3-bedroom rancher. It's been tenanted. But then 4 houses down, you'll have like a 5,000 square foot executive home. And then another one around the corner. And then this area is becoming very popular because it's not that far over the Pitt River Bridge. If you're, you know, traveling west from work or that sort of thing, you don't have to go all the way out into the eastern parts of Maple Ridge. So it's really not that far from transit and all these other sort of things. So this is a good one. The list price is $1,098,000. We're looking at offers anytime, 70-foot frontage. You could do a triple garage. You could do all kinds of things in this property, quiet street. So I like it. I'll be there Saturday, 2 to 4. Sometimes people come to my open houses just to meet me and say hi. I welcome that as well. Look forward to seeing you.
Right. So 211 Street, Maple Ridge. Go to johnnysmartpoint.com and you can see all the pictures. Looks like good prime dog walking space.
Oh, yeah. There's a dog park close by as well.
Yeah, I guess, you know, everybody's different and some people have a dog and that's crucial. If you have a dog, you want to be able to have space nearby that you can enjoy.
Absolutely. I mean, the house and the home is for the family and the pets are part of the family as far as I'm concerned. I was always raised with pets. And now that, you know, I've got a busier lifestyle, it's cats for me, Martin. But
oh, really?
I love dogs and cats. And that's something to think about if you're buying a strata property as well. What do they allow?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a dog and a cat. And sometimes it feels like they own me, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah. And before I let you go, quickly, I just want to talk about interest rates because the Bank of Canada was talking this past week, the past few days, they sort of gave the notes to their meeting, to their last meeting when they kept interest rates the same at 5%. And they're basically saying they're kind of hinting that interest rates might go down in the summer.
Yeah.
It's sort of, there's a whiff of that in the air. What are your thoughts and what are your thoughts on how that's going to affect Lower Mainland real estate?
Well, my thoughts are that first of all, that's a positive sign that they're not talking about putting rates up again.
Yeah.
From what I can tell, talking to different people in the mortgage industry, I think the hesitation with reducing rates at this time is they don't want the housing market to get too hot again, you know, because let's face it, we're never far away from a shortage. If we have a number of buyers jump into the game, that can drive prices up. So they're careful. They watch things. I'm not an economist, but I do follow this very closely. I think to some degree, the confidence is back in the market in terms of buyers not worrying. Like I talk to people and they'll say, oh, you know, we were going to do this renovation. We need to get our deck recovered. Or maybe before we sell, we might need to put a roof on. But oh gosh, interest rates. We didn't know if it was safe to, we didn't know if it was the right time and all that. And now people are starting to say, you know, the feeling I'm getting is, we feel safe again. Interest rates are not going to be 1.6 again like they were. They're not going to be 2 for any time, but they're not going up and they likely will come down in the near future. So I think that's baked into the cake to some degree. And we've got a nice balanced market right now where if you're a seller and you price appropriately to what you're offering the market, you're going to get some action. And you're going to have interested buyers who are qualified and able to buy your property. On the other hand, if you're a buyer and you have a pre-approval and a certain amount you can spend and some certain wants and needs, you will be able to find that if you take a little bit of time and compare. So it's kind of a nice Goldilocks market in that way. And I invite anybody listening who wants to talk about getting into the market or selling and want to get into this in more depth, give me a call. I'm happy to meet people.
Yeah, just go to johnnysmartpoint.com. You can give him a call at 604-612-0080 or send him an email, john@johnnysmartpoint.com. Well, thank you, John, and we will talk to you in a couple of weeks.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, Martin.
All right, Johnny Smart Point. This is Vancouver Consumer. I'm Martin Strong. Coming up, it's the story of a flight full of passengers that disappeared for years, just moments before it was supposed to land at Vancouver Airport. It's the mystery of the Trans-Canada Airways Flight 3, right after this.
This is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
Welcome back. I'm Martin Strong. Time for some This Weekend in Vancouver History. And this story goes back to 1947. It's the mystery of what happened to Trans-Canada Airways Flight 3. It was just before midnight, April 28th, 1947, when the Lockheed Lodestar, carrying 15 people, lost contact with the Vancouver airport. At 11:13, the pilot had radioed in and said they would be landing in a matter of minutes. Captain W.G. Pike sounded calm and relaxed. Everything seemed cool. But that's the last they would hear from him. As those minutes turned to hours, with no plane arriving at Vancouver Airport and no word on the radio, a search plane was sent out at 1:30 the next morning. That was April 29th, 1947. They were looking for this missing plane. That flight was coming from Vancouver from Toronto. It had made a stop in Lethbridge, Alberta, before its scheduled landing here. The Lockheed Lodestar was carrying 12 passengers and 3 crew. 7 of those people were from Vancouver, looking forward to getting home. 2 of them were student nurses at VGH, returning from a vacation. Also on the passenger list, a couple from Winnipeg on their honeymoon. After that first search plane turned up nothing, they continued to look, and by noon of the next day, the Vancouver province reported 19 aircraft, 4 boats, a supply vessel, and a U.S. Coast Guard craft had joined the hunt. Despite lots of reports of wreckages and oil slicks, the search didn't turn up a thing. The newspapers pointed out that if the plane had indeed crashed, it could be the worst accident in TransCanada Airlines history. Previously, the highest fatalities in a TCA accident were the 12 people who were killed in a 1941 crash in Thunder Bay, Ontario. None of the initial search sites panned out as they searched the outlying areas of Vancouver, so the area was expanded. A couple of days later, on April 30th, several people in Deep Cove reported they had seen flashing lights and flares on the side of Mount Coquitlam near Bunsen Lake. A search crew went in there, but they didn't find a thing. 2 days later, a helicopter was brought in from Seattle to help with the search. Despite going over 12,000 square miles, turned up nothing. Did the plane plunge into Georgia Strait? Did it crash into a mountain where it disappeared under snow? Did it fly so far off course that it was out of the search area? Still no answer. And as the spring of 1947 turned into the summer, the mystery of the missing plane that didn't show up at the Vancouver airport would slowly go further back from the front pages of the newspaper, and it was slowly forgotten by most of the general public. As the years went on, it was believed the mystery of TCA's Flight 3 in the spring of 1947 would never be solved. That is, until 45 years later, 1992. A hiker on the North Shore, walking in the Seymour Demonstration Forest on Mount Elsey, stumbles on the remains of a very old plane. At first, Mike Neal didn't even report it. He just assumed lots of people had already seen it, and they knew it was there. But he did take some pictures, and within a couple of years, those pictures were identified as the missing Lockheed Lodestar. Neal told the Vancouver Sun newspaper at the time, the wreckage was scattered over an area of a couple of hundred feet. He says about half the plane was buried, and there was wreckage that had grown into the trees. In Neal's words, it looked like the pilot came in full force. The main part of the plane was crunched right up. So what caused the crash? It was raining heavily, but this was Vancouver in April, and the landing conditions were not considered all that difficult. So while the search for the wreckage had ended, the cause of the crash will probably stay a mystery. And that search was first started in the early hours of April 28th, 1947. I'm Martin Strong, and speaking of airplanes, the reclining seat on the plane. Love it or hate it, its days may be numbered, at least on economy flights. That story and all the other consumer news of the week when Vancouver Consumer continues right after this.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.